Welcome to Street Knowledge with Chris Graham.
Got an old friend back on the podcast here. I'm Chris Graham, joined by Scott German, and we're going to talk some UVA athletics. We'll start with basketball. Scott, you and I converse a lot, text and everything else. We weren't that far off, not that long ago. We were both off the bandwagon in terms of the emotional heart and soul that we put into UVA basketball. And I think they've sucked us back in the last couple of games. The road wins at Syracuse, at Clemson. Going into the stretch, to still one more road game on this three-game road trip, if you want to call it that, at North Carolina on Saturday. You know, after the loss to Clemson at home a couple of weeks ago, this was daunting. I mean, this looked like, hey, this is the beginning of a really bad ACC season for the Hoos. Impressive wins, I think, for Virginia, both at Syracuse and Clemson. And, you know, I think a lot of fans are like us. Hey, we were kind of relaxing this year, looking forward to next year. And damn it, if these guys haven't got us thinking about this team, you know, maybe playing their way into the postseason again, the way they've played the last couple of games.
Oh, I agree. We're certainly trending in the right direction, I would say, right?
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, probably myself more than you had convinced my brain, seemingly convinced my brain, that it's okay if we suck this year because it takes a lot of stress off of me. I can go to the games and just enjoy getting out and being with friends and beating the doldrums of winter without having my heart rate, you know, getting dangerously high, which we know they do. And then this happens, two straight impressive wins on the road, which makes me want to think, shame on us for doubting Tony Bennett.
Yeah, I don't know. I would say doubting Tony Bennett. It just didn't look like, and still doesn't, that the talent is quite certainly what Virginia fans have been used to the last 10 years, probably. And that's no shame on the players. It's just one of those things. You know, you had some recruiting issues. Casey Morsella, 4-star, didn't work out. He's at NC State. Jabri Abdur-Rahim, a 4-star, didn't work out. He's at Georgia. Justin McCoy was a 3-star, but a high 3-star. He didn't work out. He's at North Carolina. And, you know, you lose Sam Hauser, you lose Trey Murphy a year sooner than you thought you would. You thought you'd had Trey Murphy for another year, maybe even two. And he's in the NBA now. Jay Huff had to leave. He's in the NBA now. You know, not a lot of programs are going to be able to withstand losing 6 guys. I mean, you know, bunch of 4-star guys, a bunch of guys who, you know, 3 guys who are in the NBA now, and just be able to reload that quickly. And Tony did the best he could. He got Armon Franklin and Jaden Gardner off the transfer portal. But, you know, you lose to Navy in your home opener. You lose to Iowa. You lose at JMU. You struggle to beat a pretty bad Pitt team. Then you get blown out by Clemson, and it's not trusting Tony. It's just saying, reality check. There's 4 4-stars coming in next year. Let's get ready for those guys. And this year's team, maybe its potential isn't quite what we're used to the potential of UVA teams being. That said, last 2 games, now defensively, Virginia hasn't been certainly at all this season. Virginia hasn't been what you'd expect out of a Tony Bennett coach Virginia team. But the last 2 games offensively, 74 points in the win at Syracuse, 75 points in the win at Clemson, with a usual number of possessions in both games, under 60 possessions in both games. The offense is looking like Malcolm Brogdon and Joe Harris are out there. That's the thing that the magic has been on Virginia's side the last couple of games, is what Tony Bennett and his staff have been able to figure out in terms of getting a team that could only score 49 points at JMU to score in the mid-70s and a couple back-to-back games on the road in the ACC.
Yeah, and you know, Chris, we'll say that I'm at the front of the line on maybe looking at it a little differently and then looking at the stat, at the statistics. I'm after the Clemson game, and we scored second game in a row, we'd scored above 70 points. And it just appeared as though, okay, maybe Tony's figured this out. Let these guys just run up and down the floor. because that's the way it did to my eye test, it looked like. But then when I poured over the stats and stat broadcast, that was a Virginia-like game. Number of possessions were about where they always are under Tony's offense.
Yeah, 59 possessions in that game for Virginia, yeah.
Just very effective possessions. And I think we hit on the key. The three-point shot was key for us against Clemson. The three-point shot was key in both Syracuse and Clemson games in that it was key because we stopped taking them.
Yeah, that's been the hard part.
And, yeah, and because I think that the old saying, well, I don't know how old it is because I think I just made it up. If you can't make them, don't take them.
Virginia in the losses, I'm trying to think. I know the JMU loss, over half the shots were threes. The Navy loss, over half the shots were threes. This is a Virginia team that's shooting in a range of 31% from three this year. It's not Kyle Guy and Ty Jerome and DeAndre Hunter putting up the threes. Armon Franklin, who shot 42.4% in Indiana last year from three, is shooting 21.5% this year from three. He's your designated three-point shooter. He's in the low 20s. Barely over the Mendoza line, as I wrote in a column. And so, you know, so you're not good at it, and then over half of your shots are threes. And then, so you go into the Syracuse game, and Syracuse plays that 2-3 zone, and Boeheim's got, you know, he's got the kind of team he wants. He's got 6'8" guards. He's got big guys out there on the wings to make those threes that you inevitably have to shoot against Syracuse tough. And Virginia only shot 20 threes out of 57 shots in that game. And then the Clemson game was even better, 14 threes out of 47 shots. This team has, between the Clemson loss on the 22nd and then the win up at Syracuse on January 1st, not only figured it out, but executing it to the point where Virginia is penetrating into the lane. The point guards, K.A. Clark and Brees Beekman, are getting in the lane. Beekman had three layups and one dunk in the win at Clemson on Tuesday night. He had five assists in both the games. K.A. Clark had a 17.8 assist game up at Syracuse this past Saturday night. You're getting Jaden Gardner involved a lot more in the post, and you're not shooting as many threes. So you're getting the ball in the paint. You're getting the ball to the rim, and you're not shooting those shots you can't make very many of. And they're winning in spite of the fact that the defense is still not where it needs to be either. I mean, Syracuse scored 69 points on 59 possessions. There were also 59 possessions in the Clemson game. Clemson scored 65 points. They're scoring over a point per possession. Virginia's out-offensing these teams, Scott. And so, you know, they're not hanging the hat where they normally do. They're just, you know, so not running and gunning, but just very efficient offense from a group that a couple of weeks ago was one of the worst groups I've ever seen play offense.
Yeah, we were talking Dave Lato bad.
Yeah.
And that's sort of the benchmark of referring to bad UVA basketball.
Yeah.
Pre-Dave Lato, post-Dave Lato, or Dave Lato era and then everything afterwards. But yeah, and you know, the team is starting, and one of the things that I was discouraged about watching the game against Clemson is that it just didn't seem, even before Clemson game at home, the Clemson game at JPJ, we looked lost without any identity whatsoever. And now you can just see it. I mean, maybe it's just me that watched enough basketball. Those guys seem to have a little bit better body chemistry on the floor. Gardner just is playing with a tremendous amount of confidence. I loved his post game comments on after the Clemson game. He was well spoken. I think the guys are buying into it, and we can't underestimate how difficult it is for players coming into Tony's system to adjust to that. And you know, we talk about high school players coming in, how difficult it is. I wonder if it's even more difficult for a player that's come out of another college program, like Gardner out of ECU, Franklin out of Indiana. Just the whole culture of what Tony has brought to Virginia basketball, that's got to be difficult to transition, regardless of how athletic and how talented you are.
You know, what's interesting to me, I think defensively is the harder issue for players, whether you're a college player or high school player coming in for the first time, because the pack line defense, as Tony Bennett and his staff use it, is so different from anything else. I mean, everything is your fundamentals. You're usually funnel defenders to the baseline when you're on the side of a court, and you funnel them to the middle in the pack line because there's more guys in the middle. So everything you've been taught from Little League on is different. But it's interesting. I pointed out that defensively, Virginia is still not where they need to be. I don't think it's from lack of effort. I think you've seen some teams hitting some threes, and it's just, I think that kind of thing averages out over the course of the season. Tony would tell you they need to close out better on threes, but you also have some guys going bonkers from three. I think offensively what's interesting here is Virginia is doing some different things. And Tony's been trying to tweak with this. I mean, we're in JPJ. We don't go on the road, but we what we see in person, I think, is really helpful when we're at JPJ. The mover blocker offense is a typical motion offense. Tony uses it as his base a lot. But they've added some tweaks to it. Reese Beekman is not effective just catching the ball in the perimeter. He's not going to make you scared with his three-point ability. He's a 15% three-point shooter. And that's not exaggerating. That's literally what he is. So instead of having him flare out means you kind of just run straight to the three-point line and catch that pass off the screen. He's curling off a lot of those screens. And curling means your momentum's carrying you towards the paint, carrying you towards the basket. He's very effective there. Both as a penetrator disher and penetrator finisher. And I mentioned the three layups and one dunk. He was 4 for 6 from the field against Clemson in the win the other night. He had 5 assists. And a lot of what I would call hockey assists, we only give one guy an assist on a play, but quite a few plays where Beekman started a play with a pass after, creating an advantage off of those curls. And then the second guy would make a pass and then that would lead to a basket. But they're also doing some different things with Jaden Gardner. Gardner is the most effective low post player Virginia's had since Anthony Gill, and I might even argue including Anthony Gill in the Tony Bennett era. And they're running a lot of triangle offense for him. People who are hearing me say this, triangle offense like Phil Jackson ran for the Bulls and the Lakers when he coached those teams of championships, where you basically have a guy in the post and then two wings, and you get the ball in the post, and then the wings can either backdoor cut or cut out to the three-point line or just clear out. And it gives that guy a lot of options. We saw Gardner had 5 assists in the – 4 assists in the win at Syracuse, and he was dishing the ball pretty well also in the win at Clemson. I don't remember the number of assists he had. But also when they finally clear out of the way, it's him one-on-one, and he's just like Gill was back at UVA in his college days. He's able to get around his guy. He's able to hit that little jumper from 12 to 15 feet. And man, oh man, all of a sudden you got a low post guy. You got guys penetrating to the rim. And Virginia was they had four. I think they were 14 of 21 at the rim in the Syracuse win. Had a good number of. I don't remember the number off the top of my head against in the Clemson win. But they're getting to the lane. They're getting to the rim. They're getting little short jumpers. They're not shooting a lot of threes. I mean, this is how you score 1.27 points per possession like they did in the Clemson game. You go out there and if you can't shoot threes, you shoot what you can shoot. So, it's been fascinating to see from literally December 22nd to, a week or two later, how quickly this team has adapted. And, of course, now, Scott, I mean, teams have tape. They know what Virginia is doing differently. It's kind of like in baseball. If you prove you can hit the fastball, then they'll start throwing you the slider. Let's see what Carolina does, the next few opponents do, to try to counter what Virginia is doing. But man, oh man, I just love what Tony and staff have done to get this offense rolling.
Yeah, Gardner is the key. I mean, I will admit, I wasn't overly impressed first half dozen games or so, but he's really starting to perform at a high level. So we have a game Saturday. I forgot who we play. Oh, North Carolina, right?
They wear the baby blue. Yeah.
Yeah. And so we had an interesting texting back and forth last night. So I was going to text you later last night, but I thought, no, I'll just wait and I'll give it some thought. So we had a debate about a use of a word.
Uh-huh.
And I kind of had a flashback to Bill Clinton's infamous about the definition of if.
Or no, his definition of is.
Is.
It depends on what the definition of is, he said during a deposition.
Yes. Teflon Bill. You got to love him, right?
Hey, he got out of it.
He got out of it. So my text last night is that after watching the end of the Carolina game, where I watched most of the Carolina game, I texted you and I said, we should win in Chapel Hill Saturday.
Yeah.
And then you texted back, basically disagreeing, saying it. Why do you say should?
I didn't like the word should. Yes.
Okay. So then I sort of changed it somewhat to could.
Uh-huh.
But now I want to go back to my original text and say should. Because, you know, Chris, I watched North Carolina last night. I know they've got a lot of four-star players, but my goodness, they play such ragtag basketball. They just run and gun and shuck up threes. And, you know, I'm just thinking, even though our pack line is not, I would not call it a high-functioning pack line as we're used to, that's kind of going to be, in my opinion, that's going to be the antidote for that Carolina style. You know, I think Carolina is going to really sputter against the type of defense we're going to play. And they're not going to like our pace at all. And I forgot last night, watching Carolina was for really the first time in depth all year. There was something missing. And the two big kids that they had that they both transferred, I believe it was Kessler.
Uh-huh.
And I forget the other one's name, but they lost two big front court players. Without them, I really think that this is a game we should win.
I don't like, I'll go back. I'll double down on not liking should. Carolina's at home. I don't like our defense as much as I'd like. I mean, Virginia's won 7 straight in this series, and it's largely been because of the defense. I mean,
there's been many games they haven't hit 50 points.
Yeah, exactly. It's been ugly for Carolina on this side of the series. And so Tony clearly has that staff's number. I'll count Hubert Davis as a continuation of that staff. He was on the staff of Roy Williams. And so and Virginia has one more day to prepare than Carolina does. Virginia played Tuesday. Carolina plays Wednesday. I worry about a couple things. Foul trouble with our bigs. Francisco Cofaro, the backup, but also Caden Shedrick. Their guys, I mean, gosh, when you look at their fouls per 40 minutes, they're over 5 per 40 minutes. I think Cofaro's around 7.5. Shedrick is around 5.5 fouls per 40 minutes. Those are the only two guys Virginia's got who play big. When those guys go out, you got to play Gardner at 5 and bring Murray in at 4. And Murray's a guard. And we see that he gets exploited when he's out there in those situations. Gardner foul trouble could be an issue too, again, because of the lack of numbers up front. There's a lot of guards on the Virginia roster, just not a lot of guys up front. That worries me. I mean, if they get a couple cheapies early, that can be a big problem for Virginia in the first half of the game. I mean, Tony loves to sit guys with one foul, and then if they get a second foul, they're definitely on the bench for the rest of the half, and that could create a problem. And just the lack of reinforcements worries me. That's the concern I've got. And I'm not saying I'm concerned they're going to, you know, that means they're going to lose the game. I just, for me, should versus could. The fact that and those two bigs played great against Clemson. We talked about this on the phone, Scott. Cofaro and Shedrick combined for 37 minutes. They were combined 5 for 5 from the floor, 6 of 8 from the line, 16 points, 8 combined rebounds, 4 combined blocks, all those by Shedrick. You put in 37 minutes, you put those numbers into one guy, that's a first team all ACC center. That's the good side, the Jekyll of the Jekyll and Hyde. You can also have games where those two guys, because they get early foul trouble, Tony's constantly changing guys in and out, trying to figure out how to get 40 minutes out of his group. So Carolina is the type of team that is built to maybe give Virginia some fits in terms of foul trouble, because they do play a big four and a big five. So that concerns me enough to go from should to could. But that's where I'll leave that.
Okay, I'll say that I respect your difference of opinion there, but I just don't. Early in the season like this, I mean, Carolina has some athletic guards. I think Bacon is probably their best player. He's pretty tough in the low post, but they're just. I think the pace of this game is going to really not favor Carolina. And I from watching their game last night against Notre Dame, and Notre Dame by no means is what I would call even a Sweet 16 team. They're going to be struggling to make the tournament themselves.
As are most ACC teams this year.
Yeah, as this could be an all-time low for ACC teams in making the big dance. But I'm just seeing – Virginia do some things that I feel like are going to really particularly give Carolina problems. Could be wrong, but I don't think this it's going to be I don't know if it's not going to be a typical Carolina game where we hold them to 50 points or below. I think it's going to be a little higher scoring game, but we've proved, you know, two games in a row now we can score in the 70s and win games.
They run – I'm just – haven't done my detailed analysis that I normally do before a game. I'll do that tomorrow. It's Thursday when we're recording this. When you – I'll just – the quick look at Synergy Sports, Synergy breaks down the offense by the various play types. Transition's a little lower for them than it normally is. They're around 16% of their offense is transition, mostly spot-ups, which is the chucking from three. And but – pick and rolls are actually a bigger part of their offense. And Virginia defends the pick and roll pretty well. Post-ups are pretty big too. And that's a Carolina thing. They play the big. So you got to watch. And that's where I worry about the foul trouble. You know what Virginia is going to do, of course. Bacot and Bacot's the guy you got to watch for. His points per possession in the post about 1.25. That's NBA level. I'm surprised the guy didn't go in the NBA draft last year. He might have been a second round pick. That's why he came back. But, you know, they are a team that chucks a lot, but they are also a team that will feed the post and try to run. They won't run against Virginia, we know. But I don't know. I'm not writing this down as a loss for Virginia in any way, shape, or form. Just should versus could. Should is when you have Radford or Fairley Dickinson in the gym. This is Carolina at Carolina with a decent Carolina team in terms of talent. I think Virginia, I'll say this just in general about this. I think Virginia to win games has to maximize the heck out of their talent. You know, there's not an excess of talent on this team. This isn't your Ty Jerome, Kyle Guy, DeAndre Hunter team. This is a team that has to play perfectly on offense, and has to have guys stay out of foul trouble. The most important guys staying out of foul trouble, Jaden Gardner, and then the two bigs, Shedrick and Cafaro. You know, you're going to get, I don't think it matters. You're going to get 38 minutes out of Clark. You're going to get 38 minutes out of Beekman. Franklin, for all of his woes shooting threes, is very valuable as a defender. And if he would just dribble drive a little more, I think he'd be even more effective on offense. He's starting to kind of figure that out a little bit, but I think this Virginia needs to squeeze every little bit of talent out of it that it can. And Carolina's got an excess. They just haven't figured out how to get anywhere close to 100% of that group. So we have to go play a perfect game in Chapel Hill to win. And I think we can, we've done it the last two games, but the margin for error for Virginia is slimmer than in recent years for this Virginia squad.
I was just reading seven straight wins, and Virginia has most of those games have been lopsided. 7 wins in a row over Carolina by an average of 9.5 points per game. Carolina's last win against UVA was in 2017, and that's a game we want to forget. Tar Heels won 65-41. I have a hard time remembering a game that ugly against them. Do you?
I vaguely remember that one. That was 2017 was the year that Kyle and Ty were freshmen. DeAndre was redshirting. That was, you know, one of those, that was a lean year. We only got a 5 seed in the tournament. This year will be the leanest year probably of all recent vintage, but that was our lean year, if you want to call it that. When those guys were young and still trying to, you know, fit in after the group that included Brogdon and Gill and Toby had graduated and moved on. So I kind of remember that, but you know, this is like that Virginia team. This feels like 2016, 2017 to me a lot. Except that we lost to Navy and JMU. That team didn't even lose. You know, I did some numbers on this, Scott. Tony Bennett, this is his, 12th year at Virginia. He had 3 years at Washington State. He had never lost 5 games before Christmas as a coach before this year. Even at Washington State had never. And he had 1 year at Washington State where I think they finished 17-16. Well, hell, his first 2 years at Virginia, they were right around 500. Still, those 2 years, they had not lost 5 games by Christmas. So, this is a different year for Tony. And you know, let's see if they can build. I mean, this is how I'll characterize this Carolina game: win or lose. How do they come out? Do they come out and play offense again like they did against Clemson and Syracuse the last 2 games? Can they play better defense, or do they lay an egg like that 2017 team did? And kind of get the doors blown off. I'd be surprised by that, but this is a key one. I mean, you know, Virginia won the first 2 games of this road trip. The third game, at this point, you're playing with house money in a sense, but, you know, now they got us hooked again. And not just me, I've been texting with some friends who are UVA fans who also are saying the same thing we're saying, Scott. All we had kind of given up on this season. We were just going to enjoy it and not put pressure on ourselves. And damn it, they've got us here again. So from that standpoint, I mean, you don't want to go out and reverse the progress. And it feels like big progress has been made in the last week. You want to go out there against Carolina and continue to play well, win or lose, play well. And of course you win. Then we're all going to go bonkers crazy about what a great job Tony's doing. He's doing a great job with this group, but I think that it's key to just go out there and play well and then let the chips fall where they may.
I was looking at some stats too. We're sitting here lamenting that the Pac-Line defense, that the defense is not as good as what we're used to. And this kind of falls under the category, boy, we've become spoiled so quick. We have the ninth, we're yielding only 57.7 points per game, which is ninth best in Division I.
Yeah, but we play the slow pace, and, you know, Virginia fans know to be efficiency geeks. We're 52nd in the country in defensive efficiency, and when would you guess the last time we've been that low or lower?
It's, again, probably
Tony's second year.
Yeah, I was going to say close to Dave Leto era.
Yeah, the first –
well, those were Dave Leto players.
His first 2 teams were 2010 and 2011, and those 2 teams each finished 71st in the country in defensive efficiency. His third team, by the way, finished 5th. So as you got some Tony recruits in there. And really since then, last year's group was the worst, if you want to say. We sacrificed defense for offense last year, playing the 3 bigs on the perimeter, and they finished 36th in the country. Now, last year's group gave up 0.933 points per possession. This year, the team's giving up 0.946. You know, last year's team scored 1.147 and this year's team scoring 1.069. So, I mean, you know, you're giving up 1 point more per 100 possessions. You're scoring 8 points less per 100 possessions. That's what takes you from, you know, ACC champions to 9-5 in the middle of the pack right now. And that's, when I watch it though, Scott, Clark and Beekman are great point guard defenders. I think Franklin's a pretty damn good defender. And I look at the stats, and Gardner's a good defender. Shedrick has a lot of block shots. I think Shedrick's one issue is he most of his block shots are help blocks, and he's so keen on blocking with help as the helper that offensive rebounds end up being an issue if he doesn't get to the block. Cafaro's a bit of a sieve, but for the most part, I mean, four of the five guys you got on the floor are pretty damn good. I don't understand how this team is, you know, not a typical Tony defensive team.
I think it's chemistry. Just there's a lot of new pieces, and I think it's just taking time.
I actually think I kind of answered my own question without acknowledging it until I stopped talking. I think it's the two guys in the middle. As much as we love Shedrick's block shots, when I look at the – I'm going to quickly pull up Synergy's defensive stats. When I look at – so Shedrick is listed as an average defender. He gives up close to a point per possession. And then Cafaro is poor, and he gives up 1.5 points per possession. Holy crap, I didn't realize it was that bad. Everybody else out there, you look – Gardner is listed as good. Franklin's very good. Beekman, very good. Clark and Statman, very good. It's the two bigs giving up offensive rebounds and point blank shots. So, and those guys have been around. There's no excuse for Cafaro. Cafaro's been there since the championship year. He was a redshirt that year. There's no excuse for him.
Well, they've been around, but they've not. Cafaro's not been in a position where he's really been counted on to come out there and give you quality minutes.
Well, but he's been in the program for 4 years. If anybody knows the system, it should be he.
I think
he is. He is by far the worst defender we've had.
Yeah, I'm not sure. It may be just athleticism. He's just not able to guard without fouling. But I think the more court time he gets, the better he's going to get. At least that's what I'm hoping.
I'm going to counter it. He's been there for 4 years. I don't know. The definition of insanity comes up to mind for me, the one you like to hear, that you do the same thing over and over and expect a different result. I don't know that there's a different result with him out there.
And there may not be. There may not be. In reality, might smack us in the head Saturday and we get beat 65-41 again. But or we try to – it's some – you know, we go back. But, again, this is not – we talked – off air, that this is – I've been following ACC basketball my whole life, and this is as weak of a league from second on down. I guess right now we have to give Duke a pass, although I still have my own theory on Duke that by middle of February they're going to be disengaged and they're going to be easily – you know, they're not going to be what they are now because they're still auditioning for the NBA, middle of February, all that's over with, and they're going to be packing it in. And look at what happened to Zion Williams, you know, late in the season for Duke. I'm not sure he's played a game this year still, has he?
He is not. He's not close this year. Zion Williamson is
– he's cashing his paychecks because – he's obviously not missing any meals.
Not the case. Yeah, he's an enigma talking about that as far as that goes. But I don't know the ACC. Yeah, you look at the. I'm just looking at Ken Pom's numbers. Our highest ranked team, other than Virginia Tech, somehow is 28th in Ken Pom. That's got to.
Does that factor in the loss to?
Oh, of course, yeah, they lost Tuesday night. Yeah. But somehow they're 28th, Carolina's 31st, and then you go to Clemson's 42nd, Florida State. I mean, these numbers have to be off because Florida State's 7-5. I mean, Florida State was picked second in the conference in preseason. I mean, you expect them, like Virginia, to reload, and Florida State is 7-5 right now. If I look at NET, I'll look at that real quick. We might only get one team in a tournament.
Well, we moved up 19 spots after the Clemson win in that.
In the NET, okay, good. That's let's see if I can pull that up real quick.
But I still think we're down pretty low in that.
If we're up 19, we might be in the top 100 now, if that's the case.
That's what losing to JMU and Navy will do to you.
Well, that's right. Miami is around 95. Let's see if I can find Virginia real quick. God, I don't even want to think about where Virginia is. I've got it up here. Let's see. The NET's got Virginia Tech 39th and Virginia actually 73rd. Yeah, up 19 spots. So 73rd. If the season ended today, we'd be nowhere near. You want to be in the at worst mid to low 30s if you want an at-large bid. Carolina's 41st. I mean, there's nobody. Duke is ninth. I mean, the ACC is going to drag Duke down at this stage. As far as that goes, I think Virginia Tech is the next team at 39, and then Carolina at 41, Wake at 46, and Wake is struggling right now.
And Tech is winless in the conference.
There's a lot of games to be played. So, Clemson 62nd, and then Virginia 73rd. Holy yeah! There's Florida State 78th. Louisville is 82nd. I mean, yeah, there's just not a lot there. So yeah, and Notre Dame 94th, even after that win last night, 94th. Miami at 95. So that buttresses the point. There's no at-large teams there except for Duke. If Duke wins the ACC tournament, we might only have one team make the NCAA tournament this year. If the season ended today, now there's a lot of time. Obviously, there's the chance. I mean, what we need to have happen now, putting our ACC hats on, not our just our UVA hats. If we want to have some teams make the tournament. I think I heard Packer and Durham saying this week too. So I hope I'm not just repeating what they say, but I agree with it. And I thought this myself, we don't need to have a lot of 10 and 10 teams. We need to have, right now, for example, you look at the ACC standings, Miami's 4-0, Louisville's 4-0, Duke's only 2-0 because they had some games canceled by COVID. Virginia's at 3-1. So we're fourth. Notre Dame is 2-1, Carolina 2-1. We need to have, in addition to Duke, we need to have some teams winning like 15 or 16 games in the conference, because the non-conference was so poor this year. Our non-conference wins and losses for the ACC were so poor this year that, I mean, we're not going to get, we might have a 13 win team, not get a bid, which is just unfathomable most years for the ACC. So we need to have, you know, Duke, whatever they, if they go 18-2, we need to have somebody go 16-4 and another team go 15-5. So those two teams can get in, because if our second best team is 13-7 in the conference, I don't know they're getting in. I mean, I think that the non-conference performance by the ACC this year was that bad that just beating each other up is not going to get us into the tournament.
Well, doing your math at 13-7, if Virginia finishes 13-7 in the conference, we're 9-5 right now. That means we finish 23-7. No, excuse me. No. What would that be? 20 wins? We've got to win. That would be 10 more wins, right?
We would be 10-6. That would make us 19-11. Yeah, I don't think that gets
19-11 is not going to do it.
I don't think it's going to get us in.
No, because if you start looking at the numbers, we're going to start some of those, a lot of those 13 wins are going to come against teams lower rated than us.
Yeah.
That we're not going to get that boost.
Yeah.
So, yeah, this could be a historically bad year unless the NCAA decides to grade on a curve.
If we grade
on the curve, we could get 6 or 8 teams in. That's the only way possible.
I mean, the last year I remember that was closest. I'm going to try to see if I can pull this up real quick. Let's see. Was it 2006? It wasn't 2006. Seven. One of the year. Yeah. Let's see. I think it was 2000. I'm looking at seven now. Virginia didn't get a bid. No, Virginia did get a bid that year. So maybe it was 8. Just looking at this. Yeah. It was nowhere. Maybe even 2009. No. Okay. There was a year we only got It may have been eight. We got four teams in, and we, those among us, you and I, Scott, and other ACC writers were like, how the hell did the NCAA tournament only give us four? It was one of those years Virginia Tech won like 25 games and didn't get a bid because Seth Greenberg scheduled, you know, poor, you know, in the non-conference. Like, how did they not get in? And so, you know, you look at it, and Tech that year was 25-9. And a 10-6 team in conference and got screwed out of a bid. And you look at that and say, man, you know, how did that happen? Well, because, again, your non-conference was that bad. I mean, that's stark. They won 25 included some NIT wins, but they won two in the NIT. So they were 23-8 in the regular season with a 10-6 record in conference play. Four games over. I mean, that would be the equivalent probably of six games over. And that'd be the equivalent of 13-7 or 14-6 in ACC play this year, and got a one seed in the NIT for their efforts there. So yeah, I don't know, man. I mean we're definitely looking at best two or three teams. I don't see how we get more than two or three in as is right now.
So briefly talking about that, and I know we're starting to run long on our time, but so. A couple of nights ago, I was listening to Packer on his afternoon show on Sirius XM. I think it's called On Campus or something.
Yeah, it's On Campus on ESPNU. Yeah, yeah.
And he expressed some concern that this wasn't a one. This, yeah, the ACC's down this year, but they weren't exactly that great last year. And that, and of course, if anyone knows ACC basketball, it's going to be Packer, who grew up with it, and is in the middle of it down in Charlotte or Greensboro, wherever. That the powers that be in the league offices in Greensboro, for now, the league offices in Greensboro, everyone knows that's going to Charlotte. They might as well just go ahead and announce it.
Yeah.
They're concerned that the ACC is really taking a hit in basketball, and they're even more of a concern because of what's likely going to happen over the next few years. Last year, the conference lost some very marquee coaching. They lost Roy Williams, who retired. This year, Krzyzewski, the dean of all coaches in the nation, and certainly the ACC, is leaving. Soon to follow will be Jim Larrinaga, Jim Boeheim.
Leonard Hamilton's in his 70s. So
you Leonard he's in his 70s, but he could whip our butts in an elevator.
No doubt about it, yes.
which we had a chance because we shared an elevator with him at the ACC tournament. But Mike Frey at Duke is probably going to be retiring or fired or something pretty soon. Larrinaga, did I miss anyone?
I think you've covered the big ones there.
So yeah. those are marquee coaching changes that are likely going to be coming up. And the Packers' comments was that don't think that the suits in Greensboro are not worried about this. And they're looking over their shoulder a little bit at the Southeast Conference, which we know is the premier conference in football, but there's some pretty darn good basketball teams in the Southeast Conference. And Packard went on to do a little study on it to show how much money that those traditional football schools are now pouring into their basketball programs. So is this something us ACC fans like we've been our entire life, you think this is something we should worry about?
I'd say, well, one, the suits in Greensboro, soon to be Charlotte, can't do anything about it because it's all about recruiting on campuses. And when you look at Duke, John Shire's got a great class coming in next year. Tony Bennett's got a great class coming in next year. Duke is not having any issues this year, and they'll be just fine next year. Virginia, whatever issues we're having this year will be, you know, referenced there with the recruiting. And Tony's recruiting a little different than Duke's. They don't have to recruit every year the way Duke does. When you have one and done, you got to recruit every year that way. Tony's guys will be around for a little bit. So I don't know. I think it could be an aberration. I mean, things go in cycles. The ACC didn't have a bad 2010s decade. You had national champions in Duke and North Carolina and Virginia. You had Florida State reemerge after some time down. Leonard Hamilton had them he's now the coach. If he can, how many ever years he lasts, he's now maybe your best coach has not won a national championship. And he might have won that in 2020 if not for COVID. He was number four in the country when the season shut down that year. I like what Virginia Tech, Mike Young has really turned things around quickly there in 3 years, I think, in my opinion. Brad Brownell's doing a great job at Clemson, in my opinion. Louisville's a question because of all the shenanigans going on there. And Louisville's a program that has national championship caliber, but there's just too much going on around there. And so NC State's also, I think this could be a big year for Kevin Keats. If this team doesn't, I mean, and they beat Virginia Tech the other night to break a 5-game losing streak, but this could be Keats' last year. I mean, there's a lot of heat on that seat down in Raleigh. Same thing in Pitt with Jason Capel. I think you're right about Mike Bray at Notre Dame. Larinaga, I'm glad to see he's having a good year this year. Maybe it's time for, he can go out on a high if that's the case for him this year. I think Wake is turning things around pretty well. Obviously, this year they've off to a hot start, and Steve Forbes doing a great job there, I think. So to me, there's too many good programs. It's just weird that there's this blip this 1 year, but let's just say Duke goes and wins a national championship. Do you think anybody's gonna be crying for the ACC if that happens? And they've got the talent to do it. I'd wait a little bit before I sound the alarm bells there, but we'll have to see how the recruiting pans out next year. The recruits are recruits until they get on campus, then they play. We'll have to see how Virginia's recruits do, how Duke's recruits do. But I don't know that I feel sorry for the ACC this year. I think it's a 1 year blip.
One of the Packers' thoughts was that the Big East additions have really not performed well in basketball. Syracuse, Pitt, Boston College, certainly. And to a big degree, Tech has not. Miami has. Miami's done very well.
Well, they did early. They had a year. They won the ACC tournament. Won the ACC regular season and tournament. But recent years, not so. Recent years, they've just been. You talk about a team that's snake bit, or program that's snake bit. Injuries for that program the last 3 or 4 years. They've had talent, just not being able to put it on the floor. But yeah, Boston College in the late 2000s decade. They were 25 plus wins a year. And then all of a sudden they've stunk for 10 years. Syracuse didn't come into our conference until 2014. They started their first year in the ACC. They started that year 25-0. And they haven't been the same since. Louisville's had Patino go out. They've had his successor go out. And now this guy's on his way out with a cloud. Yeah.
And if Louisville ever gets an AD that decides enough of the shenanigans is enough.
Yeah.
And for the lack of a better description, they stop cheating. I mean,
that's putting it matter of fact, but also bluntly. Yeah.
Hope I don't have any Louisville fans living next to me, but I mean, am I wrong?
Are you wrong? No, you're not wrong at all.
Can Louisville win without that little thing they do that I just mentioned that I probably shouldn't have? Can they win without trickery, let's say? Maybe some of it's not even cheating. I mean, hiring escorts to come into the dorms, that might be looked at as great strategy.
Well, the old saying in the SEC and SEC football is it ain't cheating unless you get caught. The problem is they've been getting caught.
If you're going to cheat, you better be pretty good at it.
You don't get caught. Don't have your assistant coach don't fire the assistant coach who knows where all the bodies are buried and then send him off to the police to get arrested for extorting you. Just keep that under the rug, man. Then you don't get caught. When you report extortion, then, Bob, by the way, he was extorting us over something we were doing. So, come on. Have better common sense than that.
So, yeah. So, you know, I hope, because I'm an ACC purist, I want to see the ACC back on top as the best basketball conference in the country. And you're right. You know, Boston, Duke's got a great recruiting class. Tony's got a top five recruiting class. You know, Carolina's going to always recruit well. I don't think Jimmy Black's going to be the guy. I think they're going to have to figure that out, but they're going to still recruit well. They just may not do much with the talent that they do bring to Chapel Hill. But this one, the transfer portal works both ways. And I think that's something that all the teams in the conference have to figure out, you know?
Well, Virginia's figured it out pretty well. We got Sam Hauser out of it. We got Braxton Key, who helped us win a national championship. This year, where will we be without Jaden Gardner and Amon Franklin? But yeah, you're right. A lot of programs in the ACC have not done great with it. I think Duke's actually done decently. They've cut a couple role players out of it, but Wake lost a couple of guys last year that could have helped them. Carolina added Brady Manick. I don't know that they added Justin McCoy too. I don't think that's helped them very much, but the transfer portal works both ways. Virginia's mastered it. Others have to catch up and then continue recruiting. You know, the ACC is still the ACC. I think, again, this is a blip, but it's a noticeable blip, and that puts pressure on us next year. Hey, we got this year still to go. We got to get a few teams in the tournament this year. And we're close to the hour mark. I'll go ahead and get us. We were going to talk football, but we talked basketball for an hour. I don't think we can do much better than that. It's basketball season. We can talk football again maybe next week, catch up on all the various.
Well, we've got some great hires coming in.
Great hires.
We can't go off. We can't stop. We can't end this without at least acknowledging what I think is really going to be a solid hire in bringing Chris Slade back to Charlottesville.
Chris Slade coming back. Yes, we had hinted towards that a few weeks ago. We knew more than we were letting on, but Slade brings, boy, I mean, he's Chris Slade one. He, you know, great player. Played in the NFL for 9 years. Then was a very successful high school coach in the Atlanta area for 9 years.
He's not coming back on his name alone.
Right. No, he's coming back with that pedigree as a great high school coach who developed a lot of SEC, ACC, NFL talent as a high school coach. And then of course retaining Marcus Hagans was a big deal as well. The alums are happy about that. Hell, Marcus Hagans is a future head Power Five coach, in my opinion, sooner rather than later, perhaps. Some other staff additions, we can talk about those. By the time we talk next week, Scott, we'll have some more, I'm sure. Des Kitching's offensive coordinator coming from the Atlanta Falcons. That's big news as well. Bad news on the transfer portal front, at least in terms of guys that have left, but you know, we'll hopefully have some good news to report next week. We got to get active in that as well on our side. There's a lot of football to talk. It deserves its own podcast. So we'll get into that next week. But Chris Slade, yes. We got to acknowledge bringing Slade back and keeping Marcus Hagans and keeping Clint Sentum. Let's talk about the other alum as well. Clint Sentum moving to linebackers coach. I presume what that means is that we'll see Slade on the defensive line as that will be his position. I noticed, Scott, that we one of the assistants we hired, I think it was the Army guy, is a wide receivers coach. That maybe tells me that Marcus Hagans may be moving to quarterbacks.
Which I think would be excellent.
Yeah, me too. I think that'd be a next step in his evolution on his way up the ladder towards offensive coordinator, either here or somewhere eventually, and then a head coach eventually. A lot of we just touched on it now. We'll get more in depth with it next week.
Yeah, one thing I'll say is fast forward or first let's go back a month, and the scuttlebutt about Anthony Poindexter coming to Virginia. I've known him since he played at Virginia. I think he's just a top shelf character guy, and it would have been great. But I think we know now that that would have been a stretch for him to come as the head coach.
Yeah.
And if you can fast forward now, Having Chris Slade come back with his connections to Tidewater. Chris grew up in Pocosin, the 757, academic All-American, first team All-American at Virginia, Pro Bowl player, just a great ambassador for the university. I think moving fast forward from the Poindexter debacle that happened to this, I think Virginia came out way ahead of this.
Yeah. Yeah. I love Tony Elliott and I love the staff he's putting together. Elliott, just a top notch guy. And I still got a few more hires to make, but
he gets it. It seems like he gets it. I mean, he's made no bones about it that we've got to recruit the state. And it's so refreshing. I mean, I'm not knocking Bronco and his mentality of what he did here, but it just always was got under my skin that we just turned our backs on recruiting the Old Dominion, which from what I have been told by people that are now part of this staff, there's a lot of good football players still in the state of Virginia.
Well, there's the last 6 years, when I did the math on this, the last 6 years, there have been 61 four- or five-star players coming out of Virginia. So, and we've only gotten two of them. So that says that there's talent here. We just haven't been tapping into it. And we used to. I mean, you mentioned Chris Slade. There, you know, Terry Kirby. There was, Rondé and Tiki Barber and James Sharper.
Heath Miller.
Keith Miller.
Thomas Jones.
Julius Jones's brother didn't go to Virginia. But, I mean, there have been – innumerable guys almost, because we're going to leave people out, so we can stop there. But man, there have been so many of those guys. Poindexter himself hadn't mentioned there too. I mean,
Charlie McDaniel was an all conference player, and now is one of huge.
Well, that was before the star system, but yeah, I mean, yeah, there's so many guys from the state of Virginia, the Commonwealth of Virginia, that were huge guys for the Virginia Press. Sean Moore, Herman Moore, Terry Kirby, I mentioned Terry Kirby. Nicky Fisher was another guy on those teams. So
Chris
many
Warren.
Of those,
I mean, we could sit here and throw those names out for the next 2 hours.
From Virginia. And we've got, you know, this year, you know, this the past few years not having guys like that here. We're talking about the transfer portal. If you're from the state of Virginia, maybe you're less likely to want to transfer out as if you're from other places. So those guys are going back home in a lot of cases. If you're already home, you're not going back home. So anyway, yeah, we'll get into that more next week. This has been a good podcast. Thanks to Scott for joining in. Of course, look for our coverage, UVA, North Carolina, Saturday at 1 o'clock tip. We'll have our post game stuff online, that afternoon/evening. So look for that from Augusta Free Press. I'll have my preview of the game tomorrow. And we'll see what else we can get into. Well, thanks to Scott. Thanks to you for listening. And everyone have a great day.